Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
From the Times and the Sunday Times, this is The Story. I'm Manveen Rana. I fully admit it. I am an addict. According to my mobile, I spend more hours looking at it every day than I spend doing almost anything else. And I'm from the generation that still remembers queuing up to use a phone box. But if you were born in the last two decades, you've probably had access to a mobile since you were a toddler. There's now growing concern, backed up by extensive research, that smartphones could be doing serious and irreparable damage to an entire generation.
There's the mental health that has rapidly deteriorated, but also loneliness, very much linked to the fact that children just aren't seeing their friends in real life. This is incontrovertible now that there is a mental health crisis.
While many teenagers recognise that the risks are real, it's still a hard habit to break.
We are, the new generation is addicted to their phones.
Yeah.
And it's quite scary, actually.
They are themselves quite sad about their phone use. You know, they say, we are the generation that's addicted.
As politicians in Britain consider how to tackle the issue, is it already too late? The story today, how do we save the smartphone generation?
My name is Helen Rumbelow, and I'm mainly a feature writer for Times 2 at the Times.
Helen, you're also a mother. Tell me about your children and tell me about their phone usage. What is that like? How much of a part of your life is it?
It is a big running battle, basically. You know, whether it's phones in their bedroom at night or, you know, just literally getting off their phones for any kind of emotional interaction, it is hard. And it's hard to watch. And I suppose when you're watching it, you're thinking, this is kind of my fault. It's a complicated mix of emotions because you've done it.
What makes you think it's your fault?
Well, because I pay for the phone contract. So here I am at the Times writing all about like the dangers of phones. And I've also, you know, the last year I've done quite a lot of big pieces about the dangers of online pornography and the dangers of online algorithms. And then the next minute I'm paying Tesco Mobile like for their data. I think it is really difficult, and I'm pleased when people talk about collective solutions, because I think parents individually feel quite helpless.
Is that one of the reasons you've been looking into this at the Times?
Partly, yes. And I think partly just because it is so new, and that is interesting as a journalist. You know, I think in the past, you know, however many hundreds, if not thousands of years, you know, the big dangers for teens were like sex, drugs, alcohol and doing idiotic things in the real world, you know, like jumping off something or going too fast. And those four have basically vanished, or they're just in chronic decline. And it's moved into this online world, which genuinely parents don't understand. We did not do this. You know, it's not like the parents of the boomer generation not understand the Beatles. Like, this is genuinely very, very different from what any humans have experienced growing up.
And just paint a picture for us of how that plays out in your household. I mean, on any given evening, how much are your kids on their phones?
I don't even want to think about it. I do, as a journalist, I often ask kids, and you can look at it on their phones, screen time, but it is way more.
I mean, that's always terrifying for all of us.
It is. What I see is their paralysis almost. It's like this kind of weird sci-fi device that has like literally paralyzed them. And I know this is not unique to my kids. They lie in these curled up fetal positions, often like on a bed or a sofa or something. And I call it the defrosted prawn, but it's just curled around the phone and everything else is motionless, you know, apart from a thumb. It looks really odd when you know that these are kids that are like biologically or evolutionarily designed to be like absolutely wild. You know, it's quite body snatchy.
Do you think it's something that we as society have noticed or done something about, you know, taken seriously while it's sort of crept up on us?
Not at all. Not at all. And it's partly because we are ourselves so addicted and distracted by the phone. You know, that makes it very hard. You know, it's a bit like the lotus eaters. You know, we just, such a sort of pleasurable death, you know, we don't notice. I think that people thought when smartphones came in, they were just a little bit of a tweak in the tech. I don't think people imagined how different it would be, the difference between a smartphone and a brick that came in roughly like 2010. And it's only ever accelerated the rate of that change. It used to be that when my kids were that age, about 11 or something, that was considered like the moment where you graduated to a smartphone. And that age has just got younger and younger. So the latest Ofcom report was 44% of nine-year-olds have a smartphone.
Wow.
And I think, you know, it'll only be a few years before that is five-year-olds. There's no deceleration. When you talk about it like that, you think, oh, this is so dark. This is so dystopian.
One book that everybody's talking about at the moment that has tried to provide a bit of that reckoning is Professor Jonathan Haidt's book, The Anxious Generation. You reviewed that for The Times. How much of an impact did that book have on you?
It was a mix of emotions. I actually read it with some relief because its argument is basically that we have to have a collective solution. And I know whatever I've written about teenagers and tech, you always get people generally in the kind of grandparental generation going, just take away the phone. But it's really not that easy. So I really appreciated the fact that he was saying we need to act on a government or a school or a policy level for this. I also found the first half of the book kind of explains the mental health crisis that is really crept up on teens in the last kind of 5 to 10 years.
Whenever I speak to Gen Z audiences, I've spoken to middle schools, high schools, college audiences, I always ask, do you think I got this wrong or do you think this is a correct description of what's happening? They agree. They're not in denial. They see the phones are messing them up. They see that social media is messing up the girls especially. So, you know, even in middle school, certainly high school, the kids actually agree that this is a problem.
That's very sad, and it is very convincing. It's not just that these things are being more diagnosed now, because as Haidt says, there are very clear measurables like visits to the hospital for suicide attempts and things like that, you know, that are not simply a change of culture.
Talk us through sort of how you quantify the difference between children now and children a generation ago.
He would say this is the period of the great rewiring. You know, we've moved from a play-based childhood to a phone-based childhood. So there's two sides of it. There's what is going on when you are on your phone. The surveys all vary, but, you know, averages are things like maybe 6 to 8 hours a day on their phones. It's what's going on when you're on your phone, but it's also the kind of opportunity cost. Like, what are you not doing because you're on your phone? So it's very much two sides of that story. So like, there's the mental health that has rapidly deteriorated, but also measurables like loneliness, which are very much linked to the fact that children just aren't seeing their friends in real life. And I see that with my own kids. They come home and then their social life is very much on the phone, you know, in a way that a generation ago, it may not have been super fun, but it would have been hanging around the bus stop, the park, the whatever, you know, socializing.
And in terms of quantifying the difference, there is the time spent on your phone versus what else you could be doing. But, you know, you mentioned also that there is the outcome, there is sort of the figures in terms of childhood depression and loneliness. Just talk us through some of the figures. I mean, how bad is it now?
The NHS records show that more than 10,000 girls under 18 were treated in hospital for self-harm in 2010. And by 2016, it was nearly 15,000. So a big leap.
Yeah.
And then we have figures from America, like emergency hospital treatment for suicide attempts or thoughts of suicide, doubled in teenagers between 2007 and 2015. They're really stark. And actually, the first third or something of Haidt's book is literally graph after graph after graph of many, many studies. You know, this is incontrovertible now that there is a mental health crisis.
Is he able to prove that mental health crisis, that this sort of this really alarming moment where we can't understand why kids seem so alienated, so alone, can he draw a direct line from that to the use of mobile phones?
I would say no. He would say yes. And his subtitle of his book is How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. So he puts causing right on the cover of the book. This is, in a way, why there's been a lot of vacillation and foot dragging in the last few years on this issue, because the scientific consensus is that we can't prove this. And correlation is so different to causation. And
yeah,
the scientific mainstream, I think, would say we do not have the data that proves causation. Obviously, that's very convenient as well for the big tech giants. My response to that is that I don't feel like we necessarily need to wait to prove causation. It's worth acting now on a kind of precautionary principle.
Mm.
If we wait for causation, you know, we may be another 10 years down the road, whereas acting to limit the use of social media doesn't seem like it has a whole lot of harms.
What sort of a reception has there been to his book?
His book has struck such a nerve. It lands both in America and in this country, just as all sorts of other debates on this very issue are bubbling up about children's mental health, about mobile phones in schools, about the really damaging algorithms on social media. And somehow, both the enormous compendium of research on the mental health crisis and the radical elegance of his ideas about the bans at 14 and 16 really have caught a nerve.
At the same time, he has experience of talking to the tech giants about this and realizing that actually very little changes.
No one should have to go through the things that your families have suffered. And this is why we invest so much and are going to continue doing industry-leading efforts to make sure that no one has to go through the types of things that your families have had to suffer.
I mean, what does he think needs to happen to stop the effects that phones seem to be having on people?
So he sets out his charter, which is a couple of things, but the main ones are no smartphones before 14 and no social media before 16. I mean, he would like both of those ages to be higher, but he thinks that's realistic. Online, he's made quite a few noises about the UK being pioneers in this field. He thinks the public mood and the momentum is greater here. And I think that's partly because a couple of things have happened in this country. Brianna Guise, murder led to a campaign from her mother to ban social media before 16.
If you're over 16, you can have an adult phone, but then under the age of 16, you can have a children's phone, which will not have all of the social media apps. So if a child is searching the kind of words that Scarlett and Eddie were searching, it would then flag up on the parent's phone.
And then just in the last couple of months, there's been a campaign called Smartphone Free Childhood, which was set up by just a couple of parents, but it really gathered momentum.
Smartphones are not good for them. We know now, we have enough data, because the people who got smartphones as children are not adults, and we know that the younger a child gets a smartphone, the worse their mental health is. It's very clear in the evidence. So I think the investment needs to switch into giving really cool brick phones for children that they can text and call on, but they don't need to do any more than that.
They've both kind of sown quite a lot of seeds in our public debate. So he says, if something's going to happen, it will happen here. And, you know, we know from people close to Downing Street that this is something that Rishi Sunak is now really interested in, not just as a father of daughters who, as Hyde points out, are particularly vulnerable to the effects of social media. I think he also senses the national mood. And when they do surveys about on parents, you know, would they like to ban social media under 16, they're generally really positive. So I think there is a lot of appetite in this country for this kind of move.
While we're waiting to see what the government does next, some schools are already making changes. Coming up, Helen's been to visit one school that's managed to ban mobile phones.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Helen, obviously we haven't had any big changes to the law here yet, but you recently went to a school where they're already implementing some changes. Tell us a bit about this school. Where is it and what sort of a school is it and how have their new rules come about?
It's called John Wallace Academy. It's in Ashford in Kent, and it's a large state comprehensive. Like pretty much every single secondary school in the country, they had a phone ban. And this is where it gets confusing, because I would say there are any secondary schools that don't have a phone ban.
Really? So, you know, so what does that mean?
No pun intended, but these are phony bans. So they are a set of rules that say to kids, you're not allowed to have your phone in class, or you're not allowed to have your phone visible at any point in the school day, one or other. And yet, in practice, they're almost impossible to enforce. You know, when you talk to teenagers about their phone use, it really is astonishing how much they manage to use it in schools with phone bans. They're quite honest about all the tricks of the trade. I mean, one girl said she thought now that they had actually managed to really ban phones, she thought her exams were going to go better. And I sort of said, why? And she said, well, I just used to Google the answers under the desk, so I never really understood it. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course, that would be it. That would, would prevent you learning. But, you know, they hide the phones from the teachers. If you imagine a teacher in a class of 30, it's going to be very hard to catch someone at it. You know, it's under the book or under the bag at the back of the class. But the biggest trick that I didn't imagine, but all the teachers said this to me, is going to the toilet. So older teachers, so I spoke to some teachers in their 50s, and they were like, you know, we used to get one kid in a lesson going to the toilet. Now we would have, you know, five or six, and then they're gone for 20 minutes.
So how have they managed in this school to make the ban stick? You know, as you say, most schools have it. It doesn't work. There are lots of ways around. What's different about this school?
This school has adopted this device. It's a company called Yondu, which has become the market leader in this, certainly in America. It actually began by, I think, someone I'd categorize as a bit of a kind of Californian hippie who was getting annoyed that the concerts he was going to were being disrupted by people videoing on their phone. So he created this pouch, which is made of something like a really thick material, like a wetsuit. And at the top of it is this lock that is exactly like the lock you'd get on like high value items in a clothes shop. You know, you have to like use that special unlocking device to get the thing open. So when it is locked, it's incredibly difficult. You know, you have to really like bash it with a sledgehammer or something to open this pouch, unless you have the unlocking device. And there's something like a million children now that are using these things worldwide, but it's only just beginning in this country.
Wow.
And when the kids come into school, they have their pouch, they have to put their phone in it, lock it on the locking device, which then gets sealed, and show the teacher on their way in to school that it is locked. Being teenagers, there's all kinds of way around it. And on TikTok and every other teen social media, there are endless videos how to get into your pouch.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they work?
They look like they work in the videos. But I have to say, I took a pouch home. My editor said, come on, look at these videos. You've got to be able to get into it. I couldn't get into it. I couldn't.
Could your kids, though? That's the question.
No. So number one way to open your pouch is to hit it really hard. But the problem with that is that teachers hear and the teacher comes running, basically. I went on this kind of spot check with the teachers at John Wallace, and actually there was really high compliance, because I think they know that if any phone is seen or heard, it gets confiscated in a draconian way. The parents have to come in school hours. And actually now the mood has turned amongst that parent body and they don't want to come in. So the kids really know what's at risk, which is their precious phone time after school.
And how much of an impact has it had? I mean, what were the kids and what were the teachers saying to you?
I have to say, the teachers are absolutely evangelical. They had some measurables, which were things like detention. So they were down in just one term by 40%. And truanting within the school day, so like people missing classes, that they didn't expect to come down, but that was down by another 25%. And that was, they were like, why is that? And it was really because these children were going to look at Netflix and stuff instead of going to geography.
Oh.
And now they couldn't access the phones. They were kind of like, there's nothing else to do. I might as well go to class. And another thing they said, it just practically vanished, is the issues they had with online bullying.
Really?
And they weren't really sure why that had happened, because they said that is something that tends to happen out of school. But somehow just being offline for that length of time, a 7-8 hour fast from your phone, seemed to have just taken all the heat out of that. But then there were so many other things which they didn't anticipate. Teachers were saying they had to actually adapt their teaching style because they needed to pick up the pace. Essentially, the children were focused in a way that was alien to them. But they were also discussing these things that I thought, God, this would be such a great anthropological study. The teacher said, we've seen them flirting. And they didn't even realize that they hadn't been flirting before, but they're like, we've actually seen someone flirting. It was like rewilding a kind of lake or something. And these botanists seeing behavior like spring up again. Like, they're so excited. There's also card games. Kids were playing cards. Kids were playing tag. So I'm like standing in the playground with the head and, you know, boys like rushing past me. And he'd been there 4 years. He said, I have not seen a game of tag before this phone ban.
Wow.
Yeah.
And were the children quite happy with it? What were they saying?
The children were conflicted.
Ah. How old were the ones that you were talking to?
Mostly in the kind of 14 to 16 bracket. And it was really interesting to talk to them because it wasn't actually what you imagine is the problem. One of the biggest refuseniks, so there's this girl that on the first day of the ban, she refused to put her phone in her pouch, and they had about 9 initially, and that dwindled down to about 5, I think, on that first morning. She's one of them. But actually it was because she needed to text her mother.
Oh.
And there's this culture that sprung up post-smartphone, that children are in a lot of contact with their parents in a way that would just simply not have been possible before. They will text them about logistics, so what time are you coming home, just really banal stuff, but also if there's a problem, like an emotional problem, their first point of call is their parents. So this girl said, I would text my mother 3 or 4 times a day. And I couldn't imagine giving that up, and it made her anxious. But the teacher said they had been cut out of that dynamic completely. And they were like, actually, we're in a school, and if there is a problem, we want to be part of that loop.
Yeah.
And now the child has to come to us and talk about it. And they felt that was healthier. And it was interesting, actually. I asked the girl, what happens now? And she said, oh, I have to wait when I talk to my mother face to face. And I said, is it better or worse? She said, oh, it's definitely better. But I said, would you like to give up the ban? And she said, yes. This happened time and time again. They would note all these ways in which things had got better. Mm. And then I would ask them, do you want your phones back? And they would say, yes.
Do you think if they had a vote for just the students, would they vote to keep it, do you think?
I don't think so. No.
Probably
I've left
not.
50-50.
Yeah.
Some would say yes, some would say no.
I reckon a lot of people I know, most of the people I know, they would vote to get rid of them. It's not like they hate them now, they just don't like the idea of it, but they still do it like they're used to it.
It is addict talk. They know they're better off without it. They still want it. They are themselves quite sad about their phone use. You know, they say, we are the generation that's addicted.
If someone could wave a magic wand and, like, remove phones completely, no one would have a phone. Do you think life would be better or worse?
Better, definitely. Years ago, they could do it, so why can't we do it?
But yeah.
They go about phones, they'll go out and meet their friends and have conversations, but now they just do it for a phone.
Yeah.
So it's different.
What do you think would be better about that?
I think it would be better because we'll be able to see outdoors more. Like, we'll go out, do things, but now we just don't.
But have you heard this argument that maybe, and I think it's just a maybe, but maybe phones are responsible for like kids feeling sad, isolated, lonely.
It's actually
irresponsible for adults to allow kids to have phones.
It's just got to be like who you mingle with. So like if you're with a bad group of friends, that will lead to bullying. If you're with a good group of friends, then you should be fine. But it kind of is the adult's responsibility because they are the ones that give you that power to go to have your phone.
That's what I really appreciated with Jonathan Haidt. He talks about our solution to the phone problem, like game theory. While everyone's doing it, no one can not do it. You know, we act as a group. Because I really do pity any teenager who unilaterally goes offline. All of their social diaries, flirting, everything has moved online. And to take one child's phone away is parental cruelty, I think it is. But if we act collectively, I think there's a chance.
Were you tempted when you left the school to take away a few of these pouches for home, for your own kids, just so that you can get a bit of proper time with them?
Yes.
Would that be a world of trouble? That was a long sigh.
It was a really long sigh because I try, you know, I do try and do my own little pouching or whatever the equivalent is, and I fail. I feel really conflicted about this because I can't even imagine it for myself. I can't do it for myself.
Yeah, that's the difficulty, I suppose.
Yeah.
We're all on our phones.
Yeah.
Would that model that the school is using, could it be used across the country? Is this the sort of thing that the government will be looking at if they are as interested in this book as they seem to be?
I'm really optimistic. That is something that could genuinely change the face of education in just the next few years if it became utterly standard for there to be really harsh, draconian bans on smartphones in schools. I think that is achievable.
Do you think the government will go for it? I mean, they have just had the smoking ban. You know, they don't seem to mind upsetting the libertarians in the party, I suppose. And there has been this CAST report into gender transition recently, which again talked about the issue of phones and how damaging they are. You know, is this the moment in terms of politics where something might be done here?
I think it is because politicians are seeking to capture the public mood. And I think the public mood is stronger on this than politicians had previously understood. Parents are absolutely crying out for legislation, basically, to step in and solve the game theory problem for them. And I wonder if we look back at this era and, you know, we were basically giving the kids the keys to the bar and saying, go for it and have whatever you want. And then we thought, oh, we'll try fiddling around with making the pop to the vodka bottle a bit more difficult to get off or whatever it is, you know, but we weren't kicking them out of the bar. Perhaps we do need to be more ambitious.
That was Helen Rumbelow, features writer at The Times, and you can find her in-depth report on the school in Kent that's managed to ban mobile phones at thetimes.co.uk. The producers today were Chris Wade, Priyanka Dilardia, and Ed Halford. The executive producer was Fiona Leach, and sound design was by Mal Aceto. If you'd like to get in touch with us, do drop us a line to thestory@thetimes.co.uk. And if you can, please do leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.